Welcome back to Latino USA, and today we're talking about el teléfono. And when you talk about phones today, you know you're not just talking about phone calls or even texts. One in three cell phone owners has used their phone to look up health information, which means things like, you know, downloading an app like MyFitnessPal to track your diet, looking up questions on WebMD, or using them for exercise the way I do. Some groups, like Latinos and African Americans, are actually more likely to look up health information on their phones than other people. Producer Antonia Cerejido brings us a story now about two psychologists in San Francisco. They're taking advantage of new mobile technology in an effort to do something big, improve the health of Latinos.
Clinical psychologist Dr. Ricardo Munoz grew up in one of the Latino strongholds of the U.S., the Mission District in San Francisco. Not unlike a very popular Latino icon, Carlos Santana.
His father came to San Francisco from Mexico in 1960. My father came in 1960 also. We lived on 14th Street. They lived on 14th Street. He went to Mission High School. I went to Mission Dolores School, which is just two blocks from Mission High School.
You really are the Santana of health. But actually, you could call him the Santana of health. Santana was a pioneer of music, and Dr. Munoz is a pioneer in psychology. He found a new way to reach out to his patients through the web. But growing up, Dr. Munoz did not want to be a rock star psychologist.
When I was a child, my nickname was El Cura, which means the priest. I actually did want to become a priest. I almost became a priest when I was 10, 13, and 18. And by the time I got to be 18, I had a lot of doubts about Catholic dogma, and so I really didn't feel I could become a priest because I couldn't teach people something that I wasn't sure about myself.
In college, he took his first introductory course in psychology.
I fell in love with it because psychology is dedicated to doing what I wanted to do as a priest, which is to help people lead good lives.
In 1985, Dr. Munoz began a clinic that offered therapy. They dealt with things like depression and helping people quit smoking, both in English and in Spanish. But
it was very hard to get Spanish-speaking smokers to come.
One possible reason:
many Latinos have more than one job, or they are taking care of their kids and don't have anybody else who can take care of them.
And there was another barrier, a cultural one.
Many Latinos feel very uncomfortable going to psychologists. No estoy loco, right? I'm not crazy, right?
So Dr. Munoz decided if people weren't going to come to him, he would go to them, or at least send the material through the mail.
And we did the study, and we found that, in fact, sending a smoking cessation guide in Spanish helped about 10% of people quit smoking.
In other words, it worked. The study worked as well, or even a bit better, than the nicotine patch.
That was amazing.
But there was a catch: the price.
It cost to create these brochures, you know, very nicely printed and colored brochures.
And this limited how many people they could reach. And so Dr. Munoz got to thinking.
This is 1997, and the web had begun about 6 years before. And it occurred to me that if we could do this via the web, we could reach a lot more people.
Thus, stopsmoking.ucsf.edu was born, a free smoking cessation site that can be found in English and in Spanish.
First thinking that we were going to help people in the San Francisco Bay Area, but then people started coming from throughout California and throughout the country and then throughout the world. It was just so surprising that through the web, we could reach so many people. Now, of course, that this is not surprising at all. But back in the 1990s, it was.
Dr. Munoz kept putting materials online.
We set up a website not just for the smoking stuff, but other things. And we put up the manuals we had been developing. And a few years ago, I went to a conference in Lima. Some psychologist came up to me and said, Dr. Munoz, would you mind coming with us? We want to show you something.
They took him to what's called un pueblo joven.
In English, it would mean like a young town, right? I guess it'd be called like a shanty town. It's a very poor, poor community.
In the town, they had a health center that had been established by Jesuits.
And in that health center, there was one room for mental health. And in that room, they were running a depression group using the manuals we had developed here at San Francisco General Hospital. And I can tell you, that's one of the highest points I had. With technology, what you can do is you can reach people even in places where there are no services for them. Let's say that you are a smoker, a Spanish-speaking smoker in, I don't know, Wyoming or, you know, someplace where there are not a lot of Latinos, and certainly no Latino psychologists or smoking cessation counselors. You could get on the internet and reach our Spanish-speaking smoking cessation site anywhere.
But some people doubted that online mental health treatment could be effective for a demographic like Latinos.
Back in the 1990s, when I began doing this work, there was the big issue of the digital divide. And sometimes we would get criticized by other Latinos that here we were doing stuff on technology and that was not really appropriate.
But Dr. Munoz takes issue with this idea. He's a really big fan of this book called Mountains Beyond Mountains by Tracy Kidder. And the book is about a true story of a doctor named Paul Farmer who became obsessed with bringing healthcare to Haiti. And there's this part in the book where Farmer and a local priest are talking about technology.
But Paul Farmer asks, are they appropriate technology? And he had picked up the term in a class at Harvard, which meant that one should use only the simplest technology required to do a job. So what does the priest say? The priest says the following. Do you know what appropriate technology means? It means good things for rich people and shit for the poor.
Dr. Munoz can relate to the priest.
That was the kind of response I was getting early on.
He never saw technology in and of itself as an obstacle.
And now I'm finding out that Latinos actually are way ahead of other ethnic groups in the U.S. in terms of smartphones.
When Dr. Munoz was developing his smoking cessation site, this data about Latinos and their connection to their phones wasn't available. But fast forward 20 years, and Dr. Adrian Aguilera, who is actually a mentee of Dr. Munoz, is well aware that a good way to reach his patients is through their phone, specifically through text.
So on a daily basis, people get a mood question, which I mentioned is, what is your mood right now on a scale of 1 through 9? Respond with a number and what you're doing or thinking right now.
Dr. Adrian Aguilera focuses on depression, and he reaches out to his patients all throughout the week using an automated text messaging system. It sends texts like,
Were you able to notice your negative, unhelpful thoughts this week? Can you think of any thoughts that improved your mood today? Take time to focus on the present. The past is left behind and the future is for later.
It helps patients do something psychologists have nicknamed homework.
When people show up to the treatment, they end up often not completing the homework, which we call it, maybe because we're calling it homework.
Homework, for people in depression treatment, means keeping track of how you're feeling. So figuring out how you feel on a scale of 1 to 9 and noticing what sorts of behaviors are triggering what feelings. So are you happier when you go for a run? Are you sad when you're about to go to sleep?
Instead of asking people to fill out a piece of paper with their mood throughout the week and maybe, you know, how many healthy activities they did each day, we're doing this via text messaging.
Dr. Aguilera then charts this information and shows it to his patients during session.
Within that data, we can start to identify maybe some low points or some high points and make those teaching moments.
There's another purpose, to offer motivation and support to his patients.
They're mostly made to help people try to think about these issues that we're talking about in therapy. And I often talk about how we're in, you know, the therapy sessions for an hour and a half every week, but there are many more hours throughout the week. And the goal is to try to continue practicing those skills that we talk about throughout the week.
I spoke to one of Dr. Aguilera's patients, Sergio Gutierrez.
Okay, Antonio, estoy listo.
¿Ahora sí me escuchas mejor?
He's from Cucho, Peru, but has been living in San Francisco for 15 years.
Estoy viviendo por 15 años en San Francisco. Me gusta mucho la ciudad, a pesar que es muy cara.
He says he likes San Francisco, even though it's very expensive. He works at a Chevron gas station part-time.
Básicamente trabajo part-time en una gasolinera, en una Chevron.
And as a house cleaner for a big house the rest of the week.
Y los otros días trabajo como house cleaner en una casa grande desde hace 15 años.
So, I have to admit, I was surprised by Sergio. I know that all depressed people aren't gray, gloomy clouds all the time, but Sergio seemed kind of like the complete opposite of what you would expect a depressed person to be. I ask why he's so happy.
Estoy contento porque ¿cuántos cumpleaños tienes tú?
He replies with a question. How many birthdays a year do you have? And like all people, I have one. Sergio says...
Yo tengo tres.
He has three.
Tuve un accidente y volví a nacer.
He says he went through an accident, and according to him, he was reborn.
Me operaron del corazón y volví a nacer, y el día que nací son tres.
Later, he went through an open heart surgery and again was reborn. Plus his actual birthday, that makes three.
Y todavía estamos vivos.
And he's still alive. He says when he has needed depression treatment, it was because he was about to hit rock bottom.
Cuando yo he ido con el doctor Aguilera era porque ya está a punto de tocar piso.
For example, after his heart surgery, he was having a hard time finding motivation.
Iba cayendo en depresión.
He began going to a clinical depression group led by Dr. Aguilera. And Dr. Aguilera suggested that Sergio get a cell phone.
No me gusta por esto, por este otro. No porque no lo pueda pagar, sino porque me interrumpe, me están llamando.
He said he didn't want one. He said he had the money. But he didn't like how it would interrupt his daily life. And if he ever were to be in a relationship, his partner could use it to control him.
Y si tienes alguna pareja como que te está controlando, y no me gusta mucho eso, le dije.
Dr. Aguilera told him that a phone could help him.
Le digo, pero eso te ayuda para esto, para este otro, este, el otro, y...
Sergio said he'd try to get one the next week.
Y ya bueno, ya voy a ver si la otra semana trato de tener un teléfono.
Now he receives text messages from Dr. Aguilera's group, but he has some issues with them.
Los mensajes de texto me ayudan, pero como le dije al Dr. Aguilera, tienen que ser, aparte motivadores que lo son, no repetitivos.
He says they are motivating, but sometimes a little repetitive. He does acknowledge, though, that he gets excited when he receives them.
Entonces, el solo hecho que te llamen para decirte es, aunque sea una cosa automatizada, es que alguien está pensando en ti.
It makes him feel like someone out there cares about him, even if the texts are programmed by some computer somewhere. Experiences like this highlight another cultural difference. Dr. Aguilera and Dr. Munoz actually found that Spanish speakers and English speakers who received the text felt differently about them. Spanish speakers said the text made them feel supported, while English speakers said the text made them feel more introspective. In general, more healthcare providers are embracing technology.
I think in the kind of on the front lines, I don't know if we're quite there, but there has been a big move towards incorporating technology in a lot of interventions.
Dr. Aguilera tells me there's a movement away from so-called self-reporting, so things like entering what you had for lunch in a diet app, towards something called passive sensing. For example, Northwestern University is developing this app called Mobilize.
It's a combination of active and passive sensing in that it would ask you similarly kind of what your mood was, but it would detect where you were geographically. So then it could start to predict when you might be feeling down or up based on where you were.
To me, this is crazy. I mean, this app could predict your mood based on where you are using the GPS data that's in your phone. Obviously, some people are spooked by the amount of personal data that can be collected through apps like these.
It's scary and exciting. I realize that. I think for those of us in the field, I think it's mostly exciting. But I guess the way I see it is You know, the Googles of the world, the Facebooks of the world are already doing this to try to sell us things. And I see our work as trying to take some of this similar data, but trying to help people be more healthy.
Dr. Aguilera worries about something else. He sees the development of fancy health tech stuff like Fitbit and Nike Fuel watches.
And that's great, but those types of technologies are in the hands of those who are most well off. And I think in order for these interventions to truly reduce costs and have a wide public health impact, they need to be targeted towards people from lower income backgrounds and people that have the highest burden of health disease and health problems.
It's not that Latinos can't handle this fancy technology. It's that sometimes they can't afford it. This question of access is what inspired both Dr. Aguilera and Dr. Munoz to get involved with technology to begin with. All of Dr. Munoz's programs and materials are still available online, and they're completely free. The Santana of Health has no plans to slow down anytime soon.
I think what drives me is that I realize that even through the web, we're just reaching a very small proportion of people. Every time I see a patient, that hour I spend with the patient is gone forever. It'll never help anyone else. It's consumable. It's used up. But through the internet, the sites I create can be used again and again and again by people all over the world, anytime it's convenient for them, anywhere.
He's not saying we need to get rid of face-to-face interventions.
There should be a therapist, a physician, a healthcare provider for every person in the world who needs it. But until we do that, I think we need to develop other kinds of interventions, like digital interventions, web apps, internet sites, etc.